views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm Debbie Pokornik, and as your host, my job is to share information that can help you realign with your vibrant, powerful self so that you can fully enjoy the life you've come here to live. Today, I'm speaking with a woman named Michelle Green. She is a mom to triplets who lives in Australia, but I believe she said she hails from the US. And she has clearly managed to build a life and business with herself at center stage. Now, that's no easy feat. So let me tell you a little bit about her, and then we'll let her chat with us. Michelle wasn't planning to have three kids, never mind all three at once. So when life dealt her triplets, she rose to the occasion and figured out what she needed to do to be a mom and still lead a vibrant and powerful life. And that's what drew me to have her on the show. You see, not only is Michelle the mother to triplets, but she's also the woman behind the Business of Baking blog, book, and podcast. She owned a custom cake company for over 10 years before deciding to sell it so she could become a full-time mentor and teacher to other women in the sweet food industry. These days, she likes to talk about cake more than make it. Now, today, I've asked her to come and talk to us about how a mom to triplets stays sane, enjoys life, and builds a business on the side. Michelle, welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Moms community.
Thanks, Debbie. I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, we're very excited to have you. So I'm hoping you can help me to kind of set the stage here right at the beginning. Were you planning to be a mom? Was that, you know, were you one of those little girls that always dreamed about your future life and, you know, planning to find a mate, start a family? Way you go.
Definitely not. My dreams actually didn't involve either partners or kids. I had this vision that I'd be that cool auntie that everybody wanted, that like had her own place in like somewhere very hip, like New York City or something. And all the, you know, nieces and nephews wanted to go there. I did not have any plan for my life. I don't even find puppies all that cute. that was not my vibe. I have to say, I wasn't into the kids and husband thing then.
Right. Oh my gosh. Okay. So now you find out, can I ask you if it's a planned pregnancy then?
It was planned. My kids were IVF babies. So it was very planned and orderly and organized. Yeah. I should say that I am American. You were right. I came to Australia on a 1-year study abroad program and met my husband here, who that was not also in the plan. And he kind of convinced me that, you know, being together was a good thing. And then he also made it really clear, kind of like from date one, that kids were non-negotiable. So I knew what I was getting into.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So now you find out that you're going to be a parent to not one, but three kids all at once. How did you feel? Lead us through that a little bit.
Oh, I was, you know, a bit like launching a business. I was equal parts thrilled and terrified. So, and particularly I think because I'd had no experience of babies, I don't come from a big family and at that I don't have loads of cousins or loads of siblings or whatever. So I had very little experience of babies and I kind of thought, oh my God, like from a practical point of view, I don't even know what to do here, let alone an emotional point of view. So right. I was pretty tripped out, but then I'm kind of a roll with the punches sort of person. So I was like, well, we'll figure it out. Every day we keep them alive is a good day, right?
And so your family then is all back in the States? Like you're there with no real support system other than your husband or your husband's family?
Correct. He has family here. Again, he comes from a smaller family as well. So yes, it was just me and my husband and his family.
Hmm. Wow. That in itself can be a real challenge. And then, like you say, you don't know. I mean, I know for myself, when I was pregnant with my first child and I was in social work and people were asking me questions and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know the answers to these questions. I better start looking them up because I don't know how to parent. You think you kind of have an idea until someone actually asks you. So, wow.
I ended up reading a lot of books actually on, you know, what to expect when you're expecting. Uh-huh. And there are actually a number of books about how to raise multiple births. So I read loads and loads and loads of those ones too.
Yes. You know, I love the fact that we have so much information at our fingertips now. Sometimes it's overwhelming. There's too much information. I remember when I was pregnant going to the shelves and looking and there was like 5 parenting books. And my oldest is 23, so it's not that long ago, right? But there's just been so much put out there now. And what to expect when you're expecting was one of my, it was like my little Bible. I read it every night to try to understand things. And
the only thing about books and information that we have now is at 3 o'clock in the morning, when that child is screaming their head down, you know, head off, you're not really thinking, oh, let me go see what chapter 55 says.
No. Yes. And that's one of the things that I talk about a lot when I'm working with somebody is the time to deal with the crisis is not when you're in crisis. I mean, that's when you have to act, obviously, but it's best if you can do the work at those calmer, happy times. Read the book, you know, before the kids are born, or read the book when the kids are sleeping, because at that time, you're not going to be able to go and find the information. And even if you can find it, it's, you know, it's not going to be able to say to you, push this button and your child will stop crying.
I always used to joke that I wish that like floating around in the amniotic sac was like a how-to for that particular kid, kind of like an almanac, and you could open it up on that specific day at that specific time and it would tell you exactly why they were upset.
Awesome. I mean, it would take all the guessing out and maybe a little bit of the fun with it too, but that would be awesome.
Maybe there need to be rules around it. You can only open it so many times in their lifetime or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, restrictions. We always have to put those in. Okay, so back to the topic at hand then. So did you ever think about being like a stay-at-home mom? Because now you've got 3 babies. To lead us through that a little bit.
For a very, very short time, like a nanosecond, I thought having triplets would force me into being a stay-at-home mom because I couldn't imagine finding childcare or finding somebody who'd be willing to look after 3 babies. But I also knew in my heart of hearts that would not suit me. And so I had to, I kind of was briefly afraid that I would have no choice but to go that route, but I knew that I so strongly didn't want to go that route that I'd have to find a solution of some kind or another. That was never in the cards for me. I have full respect for those women who can do that, but that was definitely not who I am. I couldn't do it.
Right. So when did you go back to work?
I actually, when the kids were, so in Australia, we are fortunate enough that most businesses have 12 months maternity leave. So I knew that at least I'd have that time. And when the babies were 6 months old, I got a call from work saying, look, we hate to rush you and all, but we're making some changes here. And so if you want to come back, we kind of need you to come back sooner rather than later. So I ended up going back to work part-time, 3 days a week when the kids were 9 months old.
And how did that go for you?
Brilliantly, actually. I became a much better parent. I became a much happier person. It suited me beautifully. I was tired and it was hard to juggle all that. But by 9 months, I was well and truly ready to be done with the whole being at home thing.
You know, I love hearing this. The reason I love hearing this is in Canada, we also have a full year mat leave for most people. And I was a student, so I didn't have that full year. And with my first, because I lived out in the country, I lived fairly far away from my own folks. I didn't even know it, but I was kind of going stir crazy. I needed adult conversation. And when my husband would come home, he didn't want to stress me with, you know, a recount of all the things happening in the day. So he would kind of say, oh, it was fine, when I'd say, how was your day? And it'd be like, you don't get it. I need a real conversation. And I could tell him that, but he wasn't able to do that. And so when I went back to school, when my son, I guess about 8 months old, it was perfect, because now I had interaction with other adults. I was tired, like you said, and I was happy to come home and spend that time with my child. But I was so much better when I did come home, because I wanted to be with him. I had missed him terribly, you know, so I can definitely relate. And I love that you're sharing that, because I think that there can be a lot of people who feel guilty, like there's something wrong with them if they enjoy going out and being out without their kids.
Well, that's it. I actually had a lot of people at the time who kind of criticized me for it. And I sort of went, well, my life, my rules, you know, and as long as those children are happy and well, and I am happy and well, then that's the best family we can be. So mm-hmm. if it takes me being at work to do that, then okay. And I very quickly shut down anybody who tried to kind of imply somehow leaving them or not fulfilling my role as a mother or whatever. So pretty soon people learned not to bother me about that,
right?
Because there was just no point.
I love that too. Because, well, I just think that so many people read way too much into what other people think, as if it's really any of their business, right? It's like, I don't care what you think, because it really isn't you who's living this life. I'm living this life. And yeah. To be a vibrant, powerful mom, you really do have to be able to say, what do I need? What's best for me? And then the natural branch from that is what's best for the kids as well. How do I figure out how to make this work for all of us?
100%. And, I agree.
Yeah.
100%.
So I love, love, love that you shared that. So I kind of already know the answer to this, but spell it out anyway. What happened to your identity then once you had kids? What did you do to retain yours?
Well, for a while there, it disappeared, even while I was pregnant, actually, because triplets is still, even though it's more common these days, it's still pretty remarkable. And in our community, we were the only ones for some time that had triplets. And so even while I was pregnant, I became known as the triplet lady, the triplet mom. Oh, you're that lady having triplets. And it began to drive me pretty much insane, because that's only part of who I am. It's not the whole sum of who I am. And so it became a real issue. And it got to the point where, even to this day, actually, when people ask me, do I have children? My stock answer is just yes. I don't elaborate.
Right.
Because I don't elaborate unless they kind of, you know, then ask further, how old are they or whatever, because it's just one part of my story. It's not the whole story. And for sure, I started to feel that frustration at, you know, I have a name. I'm not the triplet lady. My name's Michelle, and I like to be called by my name. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just a natural association of people putting labels on you like that, but it definitely started to frustrate me for sure.
Okay. So what, besides telling them I have a name, what did you do to keep you, to keep Michelle alive?
So
to get Michelle back?
I think for me, working was probably the biggest one of that, because at work, nobody necessarily, I mean, my immediate colleagues knew that I had kids or triplets or whatever, but other people didn't. So at work, I was very much about work. And so for me, going back to work was part of reclaiming that identity, because it was the one place where I wasn't defined entirely by my children. Mm. So that was a big impetus for going back to work. And then when I decided that I was going to change careers and find something else, that was also another part of that identity piece, because I went, I'm not happy in the work I'm doing. This isn't where I want to be. It's not fulfilling. And I knew that going to both a new industry and a new whole new life around my work was another opportunity for me to define myself from a career path point of view. And so that's what I did.
Right. So this is when you were working in a cake company, or you owned a cake company? So you left there?
No. So this is prior to that. When my kids were born, I was working in higher education administration for one of the big universities here in Australia. And although it was a great job and I loved it, it was not where I wanted to be. And I was continually frustrated by it. Anybody who's ever worked for really big bureaucratic organizations knows that it's a lot of meetings where nothing gets done.
Yes.
So I couldn't deal with that.
Right.
And there was a few meetings where I'm not going to lie, Debbie, there's a few meetings where I sat there thinking, I could be home with my kids now. Why am I sitting in this meeting?
Right.
So When the kids were two, I actually applied for and got into culinary school to retrain as a pastry chef.
When they were two?
Right.
So you got three little two-year-olds at home and you kind of go back to school.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. So I quit my job and I had that big dramatic I quit moment in my boss's office, which mm-hmm. is as satisfying as you might think.
Not quite as much as when you win the lottery, but close.
Pretty close. And yeah, I went off to cut. There's a very long story behind it, but I went to culinary school and trained as a pastry chef and we didn't have any money. And so I actually worked. I kind of faked my way. I didn't lie, but I kind of, you know, faked my way into a job as a pastry cook. And so for a period of 3 years, I was pastry cooking in the morning from 3 o'clock in the morning. I was going to school and I was raising my kids.
Oh my gosh. And you were happier than you were when you were working or not?
Oh, when I was working for the university, I was happier by a thousandfold. I was doing something that really spoke to my soul and meant so much to me. And yeah, it was a space in which who I was a pastry chef. It wasn't anything to do with a parent or an American or any other identifiers. It was just, you're as good as what you produce.
Right.
So towards the end of that time, I started to be aware that I wanted to do my own thing. And so I started making cake and stuff from home. I'd done cake decorating from the time I was a teenager, just as kind of a hobby. But some friends got together and got me a decorating class, like a Wilton level one, you know, easy decorating class. And that class opened my eyes up to the fact that although I loved pastry chefing, where I wanted to be was in cake. And so I started doing it just from home for like family and friends, completely illegally. The kitchen was not registered or anything.
Right.
And then eventually I got to the stage where I was like, okay, well, hang on a minute. This is where I want to be. So I ended up finishing two culinary degrees and opening this cake business, not knowing what I was doing, entirely on the side and still chefing, because chefing is what brought the money in, right?
Right.
And then eventually over time, I just chefed less and caked more until eventually I had my own kitchen and I had employees and eventually then moved to a bigger location and created this pretty nice sized company with me and a bunch of employees and a high street shop front. And I started teaching cake decorating and I turned it into this business. And all the while my kids just kind of came along with me. You know, they learned from a young age how to put cupcakes on a cupcake stand and how to tie ribbons on cookie bags. And they learned how to, you know, do all kinds of things related to business, actually.
Right. Come and help mommy.
Yeah. Well, that's how we were going to make it work. I wasn't willing to give up that part of my life. I wasn't willing to not be a mother. And so I found ways around making it work together. And so, you know, as an example, when I moved to my big shop, I picked a location very close to home and on my kids' bus line so that after school, they could get off the bus and come into the store and, you know, sit at the table and do their homework while I was still working. So at least we were together.
Wow. I just love how perfectly you're showing that you followed your heart and trusted that, you know what, this is what brings me joy. And when I do something that brings me joy, I can be so much more for my kids. And that is not an easy thing, it seems, for a lot of us to do, because we know the rest of the world could be watching us and thinking, well, why would you leave the security of that job to take on something that is going to make you be up at 3 a.m. and have to do this and, you know, and not be there with your kids. So I love how beautifully your story shows this, that to be a vibrant, powerful mom, you have to tune into what really works for you. And kudos to you for really doing that and standing by it.
Just recently, Debbie, somebody said to me, like, how did you manage all that? How could you do all that? Admittedly, it was a crazy life. And my answer to her was, I couldn't not do it. I couldn't fathom the idea of not doing it. It just, the compulsion to at least try was much, much stronger than the desire to sit in one place and just kind of live this half life. I couldn't do it. I still can't do it, actually.
Right. Well, I can totally relate to you. I have confused a lot of people with my journey that just look at me and go, why would you leave that to, you know, do this? And I go, you know, it doesn't even really feel like my decision. Like, it's not like I can sit down and say, no, I don't want to do that. It's more like I'm being pulled in that direction and I'm just going to go along because resistance is futile. It will hurt more to resist.
That's absolutely, I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So I love the fact that you know, you were able to balance this, any struggle between wanting and loving work with wanting and loving being a mom. Is there anything more you would like to add to what you did to really make that work?
I would probably say that I should temper this by saying I actually adore being a mom now. And even though I didn't grow up very clucky or kind of motherly or whatever, and I still don't like puppies, I do adore being a mom, and I do adore my kids, and they are a massive driving force between all of my success now. I definitely have them and their lives in mind when I make business choices. But I guess the thing I want to say is it's not that I didn't have mommy guilt, because I did, right? I did have those moments where I was like, what am I doing? I should be home with them or whatever. But yeah, that compulsion was always just way, 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 to be my own person outside of them was always way stronger. And interestingly, somebody asked me some recent questions about being a mom as well and running a business. And I ended up doing a Facebook Live with one of my kids. And I sat her down in front of this audience of several hundred people. And I said, so tell me, what was it like to have a mom who's worked, right? Do you feel like you missed out, or do you feel like somehow you didn't get a full mom, or my attention was taken away from you? Because that, I think, is the biggest thing, that we think our attention is not on them all the time, and that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And she jokingly, she's got a great sense of humor, and she said, my reasons for going to therapy when I'm an adult will have nothing to do with the fact that you ran a business full time.
Oh, that's cute.
And I went, oh, okay, that's good. Thanks. Yeah. But I was very surprised by that kind of interview with my own daughter, where she said, I never felt that you weren't paying us attention, or you weren't there for us, or you weren't anything. And she said, I never felt a sense of lack because you weren't a full-time mom. I never wanted that. And I knew that you didn't want that. And so, no. And I said, you know, when you look at your friends who have full-time moms, you know, do you ever feel that feeling like, I wish my mom was like that or whatever? And she goes, never. I've never felt that. Because I have to say, the guilt I had was that, like, that they think I'm not paying, you know, because right. There was plenty of times I sat in playgrounds and took orders on my phone while they were playing, or, right. You know, they're trying to get my attention, as children do when you're on the phone, and I'm going, I'm talking to a client, shh, shh, you know, and I'm shushing them out the door or whatever. And I thought they would feel a real sense of that, like they had been pushed aside for the priority of the business. And she said, not at all. I've never felt that. Right. And I thought, man, that's 16 years of wasted guilt right there.
Well, and guilt is a waste. It is such, I mean, unless we can take that feeling and say, okay, what do I need to learn from this? What do I need to change? That guilt itself is just a drain on our energy. So, you know, you're right. It's there. And I think a lot of it comes from hearing other people talk about what they do or what they did with their kids. And the truth is, if we're there with our kids, if we create that kind of relationship with them where they know that we've got their back no matter what, we're there for them. If something big happens, we're going to drop whatever we're doing and be there for them. They feel loved. They feel like they're part of something bigger, and they love that you're happy. Because, boy, when you're not happy, it's really difficult to be there for somebody, right? And yeah. Really care about what's going on for them. So I love it. Love, love, love your story. And we are getting to the end of our time. So what I'd like to do, I just would like to give you a little bit of time to close us off with, if you have any last minute words of wisdom or anything. I have written here that if you have any kind of invite regarding your business that you'd like to share, feel free to do that. I think you mentioned that you might not, and that's fine. But I do want people to know that they can find you at thebizofbaking.com. So if you're interested in her business side of things and you want to talk business, look for thebizofbaking.com. And with that said, Michelle, if you have any last minute words of wisdom or anything that you'd like to share, now's your time.
I think the last thing I'd just like to share to anybody listening to this is that you have permission to be someone outside of your kids. Mm. Like, it's okay. You really can. You can choose yourself and them at the same time. It's not a case of you or them. It can be us together as a family and a community. And make your kids part of that decision-making process if they're old enough to do so. And if they're not, understand that the gifts that you are giving them will go way beyond the gifts of motherhood. You will be teaching them so much by choosing to be someone in addition to them, not instead of them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you and I talked briefly on the phone about how when your kids leave, they might all leave at the same time because they're all teenagers now and they're all the same age, and about empty nest. But one of the things that really struck me is you're not going to have empty nest. Why? Because you've created your own world that doesn't just rely on them. They're an important piece of it, but you've got your own space as well. So that is beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us here today. I think that there's a lot there for people to think about and to really recognize that it doesn't serve us to spend our time feeling guilty or doing what others are telling us we should be doing. And so thank you so much, Michelle, for coming and sharing that. Thank you to our listeners. I so appreciate you. And with much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik and her guest, Michelle Green, wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Standing up for yourself is an important part of reclaiming your personal power. It's also very misunderstood. It's hard to be assertive if you don't understand what it does, how it differs from aggression, and even why it's important. Being assertive means standing up for yourself and the things you believe in without attacking or putting the other person down. It's a skill that actually requires a lot of self-control, personal strength, and clarity in what you believe. Assertiveness never involves behaviors like shouting, insulting, threatening, or swearing. When being assertive, it's important to understand that this is something you do for yourself, to let go of negative emotions. It's not about getting your way or setting the other person straight, as much as it is about saying your piece and feeling good about yourself in the process. This is so important to understand, because if you think being assertive is about changing another person's behaviors and then that person doesn't change, you'll think that assertiveness has failed you. Anytime we try to control another person's behavior, we set ourselves up for failure. Assertiveness is a way of venting emotions that would otherwise bottle up inside you and eventually surface, like in an illness or an emotional explosion. The trick to using it successfully is to stay calm, make your point, and then let it go. That means if you continue to rethink the scene in a negative way, if you go over and over it again in your mind, you're not going to reap the benefits of standing up for yourself. Now, although changing other people's behavior is not a goal of this act, one of the great things about being assertive is that often an ill-meaning person is counting on you reacting in a negative way. So either passively by doing nothing or aggressively by attacking them. When you respond assertively, with strength and composure, it throws them off balance, which can actually result in a change in their behavior. Sometimes this type of reaction even creates a reluctant form of respect, causing them to change their behavior towards you permanently. When this happens, consider it a bonus to reap the rewards of your emotional vent and witness a positive result from your actions at the same time. But don't count on that for you to decide how well it worked. Assertiveness grows from confidence, which in turn feeds off of being assertive. Notice how you react when people do or say something that brings up negative emotions in you. Take note of how you stand, the words you use, your tone of voice, and, if possible, even the look on your face. Self-awareness is the first step towards making any changes in your life. So if you want to become more assertive, that would be the best place to start.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.